military veterans, and active duty service members. You could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.
Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast as we review the Bahrain Grand Prix and look back at the fun and frolics in Sakhir. My name is Michael Bailey. I have a now familiar panel, I think it's fair to say, of Kyle Cumbers, Richard Baxter and Josh Raymond. Gentlemen, good evening. Kyle, how are you? Are you well?
I'm very well, very, very well.
Good to see you. As we just periscoped, which was very exciting, clearly, as we mentioned on there, you have bought a can of Red Bull in. Explain.
It's just lack of energy. I'm not promoting or supporting the Formula One team. Lack of energy.
Well, I'm just going to say you've opened yourself up to ridicule if you are now overly biased or maybe critical. I don't know, because it might have been a bad can. Is there such a thing as a bad can of Red Bull? We're not going to answer that because that might be promoting it. Do you reckon we'll get extra money for this? I don't know. If we keep mentioning them, we might send us a can of back.
Great.
And then you'd have to never buy your Red Bull again. But obviously, you'd want to. Would you?
A Monster the following week and we'll be okay.
Yes. Let's see who sends us a can first. Come on, people. Brilliant. Richard, how are you? Are you well?
I'm very good, thank you. Yes.
And we've already exposed the public to your pirate jumper, t-shirt even.
Yeah, it's stripy.
Which is literally what makes it a pirate t-shirt.
Yes, as far as I went with that. That was the whole thought behind it.
Fair enough. Yeah. It was fair enough. Josh, you well?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Good man. Now, you did just miss the start of the Grand Prix.
I missed a little bit of the Grand Prix. I mean, 17 laps.
17 laps. But you did see the start.
I did.
And then it was the bit sort of after that.
I missed that bit.
That's okay. Yeah. I mean, I fell asleep. But I did watch it back, just about, just to sort of work out what happened.
When I tuned in and I saw the top four was, I think it was Hamilton, Rosberg, Ferrari at that point. I was like, well, clearly I missed a very entertaining... 17.
That's all gone.
So was it the race that caused you to fall asleep, or just a...
No, I think it was my tiredness. It was a strop. I was in a football-induced strop for... I probably still am, to be honest. But shaking aside all that stuff, I think I was just tired. I just woke up and said, oh, what's gone on there? Vettel's fifth. Don't know what's happened. And then I worked out and obviously got to watch it back. But let's say it was a pretty good race, wasn't it? Maybe not as good as last year's, but last year's was brilliant. This was good.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it. I mean, last year's race was... You're lucky if you get one of those in a season. It wasn't that good. But yeah, I thought it was decent tactical. Rosberg, a few overtakes, and yeah, Raikkonen coming through towards the end. Yeah, it's a good race.
Helped by a few mechanical issues, I suppose. Did help out, didn't it?
Yeah, there was a lot, especially Jenson Button, who I think all weekend only did about 3 laps, and his car just gave up every time in all the practice sessions as well and qualifying.
And basically, we'll come on to them later, but they basically didn't get out of the pit lane, did he, I think, for qualifying? Or did he get to a couple of corners and that was it?
Yeah, the first couple of corners. And that was it, yeah.
And we never saw him again.
No. Apparently he was tweeting during the race, which was quite entertaining, but I need to look back on that.
Poor guy.
I think I saw the summation of his tweets during the race. It was quite good.
So future as a pundit.
Potentially, yes.
Well, he did say, one of the tweets I saw, he said Kimi's one to watch this race, and turned out to be pretty accurate. So
he did indeed, didn't he? He had a great race, Kimi. I did want to just touch on qualifying, because it was a great effort from Sebastian Vettel to split the two Mercedes, and Lewis again was just dominant, which he of course then took into the race.
I don't know if it was good by Vettel or bad by Rosberg.
Tell us, Kyle.
Because I think the gap was still four tenths to half a second, so which is probably the rough distance between Mercedes and Ferrari in qualifying. So, yeah, I mean, Vettel took advantage of Rosberg's mistakes, I think, in qualifying.
It's not really going his way, is it, Nico, at the moment?
No, he came with a strange excuse that because he didn't do a, because he was looking after his tyres in Q2, that he wasn't quite ready for Q3, which I think sometimes he's just got to get on with it now and just try, you know, coming out with excuses like that isn't making him look good. But,
well, Nico's not a man for excuses, surely, is he? I mean, now, Lewis really was dominant all weekend. We didn't really see him much during the race, apart from the late issues he had with the brake-by-wire. And the Mercedes actually had a few technical issues with their braking systems, and that screwed Nico up as well. But rather than Lewis noticing the situation, being able to deal with it, Nico reckoned his happened right in the middle of a braking zone, and therefore he went wide and Kimi was able to overtake him, which, you know, things just aren't going his way. And yet during the race he'd been pretty racy and pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, it was very entertaining during the race. He learned a lot from last year, from the way when he overtook, he pushed cars to the outside on the corner. We saw him do that with Vettel and Raikkonen as well during the race.
Yeah, the pass with Vettel was great, I thought.
But then also, I mean, I'm not a racing driver, so I don't know. When you guys do cars, you might know better than me.
Oh, here we go.
When you're on your brakes, surely if there's a problem that's kind of occurring, would you not notice it to start with? Would you kind of think they're fading away a bit, or?
I suppose it depends, because it's a brake-by-wire system. I mean, that means it could go seemingly at random. I wouldn't say. I mean, I had some brake troubles at Snetterton last year, and it would just sort of, I managed to go backwards at one point, just at random, hit the brakes as I would have done the previous lap, and then I was backwards going towards the tyre wall. I was like, this is strange. I think the brakes, when they do go wrong, they are quite haphazard and unpredictable, and it really throws your stability in the car when you can't trust that sort of.
I mean, Lewis got a warning light, which he seemed to notice, which meant that he could ask about it. Yeah. And I then he was instructed to coast.
It helped having the 5 or 10 second buffer that he had to.
Yeah.
Whereas Nico was under, sort of, he couldn't slow down, otherwise Kimi would have got him.
And he was right in traffic at that point as well, I suppose, so he's probably looking elsewhere. But
I think Kimi would have got him
anyway, yeah.
I think he would have been. But I think it definitely put Nico under pressure when that problem came along.
Going back to the start, it was a great start from Lewis. I mean, these are the key moments, aren't they, when you can win, and there's nothing more exciting than the start of a Grand Prix. I love it. But just bam, hammer down, off he went, and that was that really was job done to an extent. It was putting his foot down on the Grand Prix and owning it.
For the last season a bit now, he said, I can't remember the last time he had a bad start, really. He seems to done really well in that. I think he got too good a start away, because he nearly got caught out by Vettel and Rosberg, Vettel trying to defend from Rosberg, and he sort of had to quickly defend at the end. I mean, it's too good in a way. But, I think he just got so much confidence in his car. And I think he said in an interview afterwards, he was going through one corner and he said to himself, damn, I love this car, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just everything's going his way at the moment. And,
he's on spectacular form at the moment.
It's almost, if you win a world championship, it does seem to raise your level, doesn't it? And we're seeing that at the moment, especially.
Absolutely. I mean, when the pressure was on, if you look back at Abu Dhabi last year, the start he did then was incredible as well. I can't remember, there was some time they brought out, wasn't there, for the reaction that it took. But you think, oh, okay, as you drive your 500 lights, they go out, it must be a certain time you can work to. But then what I found even more impressive was the start was, they had the 500 lights on, they stayed on for a long time. And then it actually took a long time for the lights to start coming on as well, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
So it's quite impressive that he managed to keep his nerve, know exactly what he needed to do for that extended bit of time, and still get the start that he got as well.
But that's the thing, isn't it? In that situation, at the start, you wonder if Nico would fluff it, whereas you know that Lewis would nail it, and that's just almost the form at the moment. Whether it's the class, I don't know, but it's the way it seems to be going for them both. Some great racing after Lewis's first pit stop, when I think Nico was up against Vettel, and each pit stop seemed to bring them all closer together by one means or another. It was great to see.
Yeah, but I think Rosberg definitely learned something from his battle with Hamilton last year, the first corner, because he sort of made the overtake stick by pushing the Ferrari.
Yeah,
out.
As Richard said, definitely.
And the pit stops just seemed, I don't know, tyres, they must have gone too far on the tyres, because the time Vettel came out, I was looking at the live timings.
Yeah, it must be said that Kyle has currently got the race running out as we go along live. Yeah. We're 12 minutes in.
Yeah, lap 8 at the moment.
Lap 8. Will the race finish before the podcast? I hope so. I'm sure you do too.
But I saw Vettel was actually 2 seconds quicker in the middle sector than two Ferraris at the time. They pushed that 2-stop, but maybe a 3-stop was a quicker way if the tyres were that strong, or that weak, should we say. And at the time I thought this decision by Mercedes to let Rosberg go in first could have let Hamilton in trouble, which he nearly did in the end, which I'm surprised he didn't, because obviously Hamilton does like to get on the radio. I didn't hear him on the radio moan, but you know, I had a 5-second gap and I come out of the pits and I've got my teammate and Vettel just behind me. So.
He did mention it after the race, I think, in his press conference, but he was calm about it, which I suppose you would be when you've just won.
It doesn't matter then, does it?
I think it always helps.
It does indeed.
When Martin Brundle was talking with the pit stops, it was the undercut. I think he loves that because it's tactical.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to someone actually over the weekend and they were saying Ferrari this season, they just seem to have taken a whole new approach with their tactics, because it all seemed to go wrong since 2010 in Abu Dhabi when they followed the leader of the race rather than doing their own thing. And since it went wrong, but this season they seem to have changed something and picked it up again, because that's how they won a race and they've got some decent results as well.
But maybe they've got some decent people calling the strategy this time, because I mean they were shambles really, weren't they, for about 4 or 5 years, to be honest, with what they were deciding.
It's kind of like Williams in a sense. They seem to throw away some very decent race potential for potential race finishes for the strategy, where they seem to not react to what was going on in the races. Sort of last season.
Certainly the season before.
Especially, wasn't it? Yeah. They're conservative, sort of, we're happy with third and fourth. And like, actually, you can win this Grand Prix.
Yep. All been there. Just a quick final word on Mercedes. A little bit worried about future reliability because a little bit of a wobble, and seemed to be as a direct result of the fact that they're now having to switch their focus onto being pushed by Ferrari as well.
They had a few blips last year, which sort of allowed other people to look in. I imagine they'll probably have the same sort of thing this year if they can keep it under a certain amount of races. I can't imagine it would threaten them too much.
They're very good at both cars seem to have the same problem at the same time.
They do, yes.
Very, very consistent in the fact they go wrong at the same time.
It's true.
Well, it was quite interesting about how Red Bull was saying that they have engine failures. They're saying it's the engine failures we know were going to happen. And then hope, because they said something about they can't replace or change the parts until they get back to Europe. So, like Ricciardo's engine, as they said, as long as it was a failure they knew was going to happen, it's okay.
Great.
That is not an ideal situation to be in, really.
Well, I think as well, Mercedes, they said something after their last race, I think, in China, something about the same problem with both cars or along those lines. So, I mean, as you say, they could be starting to buckle under pressure a bit and trying to push too much, but it's going to be interesting to see. It'll make it more exciting anyway.
Yeah, we could all do with it, really, can we? Let's be honest. Okay, let's have the NRF1 pit stops. I'm not really sure why I do that voice for those, but let's just touch on Ferrari, shall we? Raikkonen, 7 podiums in Bahrain now. Phenomenal. The man likes Bahrain.
But he's never won, is that correct?
That probably sounds right. I'd have to check it.
He said he never won.
Yeah. It's a brilliant stat, isn't it? He's really good, but he's never quite had the luck maybe to
good
win.
But not good enough. Close. It's a great effort, and it's great to see Kimi back on it, assuming that he can keep it up, I suppose. Vettel, I mean, Sebastian Vettel, was a bit of a ragged race, wasn't it? And you wondered if it was almost like he was claiming that his front nose had been damaged before he went off initially, but that was almost how it felt. But then when he spoke after the race, he made it quite clear that he'd done some sort of damage to the front of his car when he went off and sort of outbraked himself when he was under pressure from Rosberg. You don't normally see Seb making those mistakes.
It's a very strange place to make the mistake as well. If you actually look at the part of the circuit, it's just a sort of a bold 90 degree corner onto the straight, isn't it? It's not exactly a challenging corner. Yeah. Home,
sort of a double, say. It's like a double apex, and it unravels, and it was almost like he
just drifted wide, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's sort of done that on the sort of middle straight as well. He sort of drifted sort of the end of the first DRS bit, he just sort of drifted wide. So I thought there might have been a problem, but
Well, that was it.
They haven't said anything. Yeah.
No, I almost expected him to say, "Oh no, something had broken before." And
it
no,
did it look just very strange, particularly the last off, which is the one that I think did his front wing, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
And what got me as well was when he came into the pits, and they put a new front wing on there. From just the camera shots, I couldn't see any major damage to it.
No,
I mean, unless it was just some what they say about debris gets stuck in between. He's thin on the wing and everything, unless it was something like that. But other than that, I couldn't see any major bits missing, and I thought, was that just a bit of a
kidology?
Yeah, it was...
maybe that would be a long stop for kidology, wouldn't it? But
they did say it was end plates as well, and I thought the end plates looked intact. I thought they.
I was wondering if this sort of came loose. So that
just lie. It's probably just lie. There was nothing wrong with it. He was just trying to cover his tracks. Yeah, he won the last race. It's fine. Red Bull. Daniil Kvyat was out in Q1, which for a Red Bull is ridiculous, really. A new low. That's what I would call it, a new low. As you mentioned earlier, Josh, Red Bull's Daniel Ricciardo is on his fourth engine.
Yeah.
Come Barcelona.
They've agreed five.
Have they agreed five?
They have rubber stamped a fifth engine.
Okay, so he's got one. So, okay, one more engine for the rest of the Grand, for the rest of the season.
It's two engines for a whole season, because all the other ones have been terminally destroyed, I think, in some way or shape or form.
It's crazy. It's about 100, 150 miles a race. And if you had a car and you did 150 miles and then you needed a new engine, I think you'd be a bit annoyed.
Yes.
Especially if that engine was however many millions, and
25 around £25 million per power unit or something like that, something stupid. Well, yeah, so Ricciardo's down to two engines for the rest of the season then, basically. I mean, they're not going to last, because I don't think they're built to last that long with what, 15 races still to 15, go. So he will be getting grid penalties. It just about sums up their problems. Yeah, they did get a double points finish. So,
because he did finish, didn't he?
He actually finished. He coasted over the line, engine blowing up. As Christian Horner said, the engine wanted to join the fireworks and blow. So, is it better for Red Bull? Worse? Where are they?
Well, I was a bit surprised by... I did put a post on Twitter as well about Kvyat in practice three, before qualifying in the morning. And he spun, going... I can't remember what turn it was, but he spun it. And then he seems to go right hand down on the steering wheel and just let the car roll backwards, and then he went into gravel, and he beached himself.
I saw the replay of that. It was really strange, wasn't it?
And it's like, why not brake or put the power on and keep going or something? And he was looking in his mirror, and he just threw at an angle. And I thought, is the car that bad? He just gave up
driving. Yeah, I'm parking this. Eddie says it was his move was a year too early, so maybe it's Daniil as much as the car, Kyle?
Maybe he's enjoying the underdog status at Toro Rosso, and now they've got Max and Sainz in there. That they're sort of getting the headlines, and he's in a not very quick Red Bull.
I say it's being thrown to the wolves a bit, isn't it, to be thrown into that Red Bull as your first mainline car.
He's still pretty young as well, isn't he? I can't remember exactly how young he is, but he's
21.
Yeah. I mean, more experienced drivers, or older drivers, should you say, going into bigger teams probably a bit more suited. But yeah, he's a young man, and then taking the stress on all the headlines of Renault and that, maybe it's just a bit too much at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot on your plate initially, definitely. Toro Rosso had two retirements, they had a pretty wretched weekend for the good work they've done recently. McLaren, we've already touched on the fact we didn't see Jensen all weekend. I mean, that's the worst possible weekend you could possibly have. I've never seen a weekend like it, where you, in a front-running team, essentially, which is what McLaren should be and are, essentially, to a degree, certainly a historic, traditional, loved team, to not have the car in the right frame to go out properly in qualifying or the race.
It's not great when you don't start a race because you know it's going to break down.
No.
We're pretty much there. We know it's going to break down after two or three laps, so there's no point in going out, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, Ron Dennis, I can't remember what part, was it the race or the qualifying or whatever, he seemed to start to show a bit of frustration, which
he was having an argument with Eric Boullier. Well, not an argument, but a
discussion. Heated discussion. So yeah, and probably like they keep going on about, oh, it's going to be great and the car's great and we're all great, we all love this, and it's like, it's not really at the moment, and you don't know if it's going to be good, and you know, we hope so, because it'd be great if we had a strong Mercedes, strong Ferrari, strong Red Bull, and strong McLaren. But yeah, at the moment it's not, yeah, it's not really good enough.
It's got to be one of the weakest showings of the double world championship driver pairing that I can remember off the top of my head. So, it was quite interesting. I was watching off one of the historic races on Sky, and it was 97 Belgium, 97 Hungarian Grand Prix with Damon Hill in the Arrows.
Yes.
Oh. That was a very interesting season for a world champion to go from Williams to Arrows.
What a season that was. Yes. But remember that British Grand Prix? Was it that year? 97 British Grand Prix where he almost finished third or completely out of nowhere?
Yeah. He was up there, I know that much.
And it was just nuts, because they did nothing all year, and all of a sudden Arrows were up there. And Silverstone. It was the only time I thought Formula One approached fairy tale. And then I think it didn't finish, or something went wrong. Can't remember exactly. I have to remind myself of that race. But what I would say about the McLaren, the Honda engine sounds good. It sounded good, I thought. It sounds a little bit different to the Mercedes and the Ferrari. It's a bit sort of two-tone.
Yeah, it is, but hasn't some of the commentators said that that's because it's broken?
Well, I get that point. The only thing is that Alonso was running in the points at that point, so I thought, well, that's all right. And you know, he finished 11th, Fernando Alonso, and as far as he said, you know, it's their last bad race, because from here on in, they will be fine. I think that's sort of what he said.
He said Spain will be fine.
Yeah, Spain will be fine.
The same Grand Prix will be fine. Yeah. Which, fair enough.
Ticket sales. Let's boost those ticket sales.
And if you actually look at it, if there's one more lap on that race, Ricciardo's engine still gone, he would have got 10th place.
Good point.
Very true.
But you see, they timed it perfectly, you see. Timed it perfectly. I've got down here Lotus, because I want to obviously mention Lotus with their mini Norfolk connections. Romain Grosjean solid again, 7th. Did he finish? You won't know, Carl, because you're still on lap. What are you on lap?
I'm just the pit stop stage.
You're on the pit stops.
Yeah,
or 7th.
He did finish 7th, so you know, it's another solid weekend really for them. Pastor Maldonado, he mucked up the grid somewhat, didn't he? Did he get penalised for it? I was trying to remember this. He did.
5 seconds. The problem was, he didn't gain a space, did he? He was behind a space.
He was too far back.
So he
which is even more stupid. I mean, that's
he qualified 16th, I think, and Kvyat was 17th. And then he started
in Kvyat's
behind Kvyat. Kvyat was in the correct space, and he was one behind.
And that pushed Stevens back a whole row behind Mary.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
maybe he was planning to go before the lights, but then as long as he didn't go past his actual grid spot.
Was it because of Massa? No, it wouldn't have been because of Massa, because he was far, well down.
They're still in their same space. It just means whoever's...
There's an empty space in front of them.
There's an empty space in front of Pasta.
But not directly, about four spaces in front.
Yeah, so it's still been behind the same car. So because they don't move up, they just leave massive space there. So essentially it didn't affect Pasta.
No, he just followed the car in front. Hasn't he done that before, though? Didn't he do that somewhere else where somebody pulled out?
Probably.
In Belgium, in 2012, he jump started. He pulled in. He had a clutch problem. He jump started, which then obviously triggered the massive near death.
Oh gosh, that's right. That was all Pastor's fault. Probably a bit harsh. And Pastor did break his car. I've decided, because they basically, I think on the BBC coverage, they said that he was approaching the pit limit speed. It was too close to that. So the revs were too low, so it went into anti-stall, but because he was at the pit limiter, the engine couldn't just push on into anti-stall, so it just cut out. So he literally broke his car. That's the suggestion. Then I think they then sort of got it restarted in the pit lane, probably by turning it off and on again. So that's, I mean, epic.
I mean, it's quite funny, but does it get to the point where he's taking a seat with somebody that...
Cha-ching!
I know,
Mr. Palmer.
Yeah, Mr. Palmer's sort of sitting there.
Well, you'd think he'd have some money, actually, wouldn't you, Jody?
He's got a fair amount, yeah.
He drove me around Snetterton once.
Could be even old Carmen Jorda.
Yeah, indeed.
She's probably got a fair amount of money.
Yes, I imagine she is well-backed, and she's going to have a practice session soon, isn't she?
Lord.
Oh. Well, you can't say that, Kyle. What's wrong with that?
She's slow.
She
is slow.
Okay, well, if she's slow, then fair enough.
I think, to be honest, not being disrespectful to women drivers, because Susie Wolf has proved this by showing that she's actually got a talent for it.
Absolutely.
But others, I think, some teams just get them in for a bit of a headline, to be brutally honest. That's my personal feeling.
No, I would agree with that, and I think that's an issue because a lot of Formula One teams don't treat it seriously. And to be honest, I would like to see, in so many other different categories of motorsport, you see men and women racing together. So it's clearly not an issue. It's like snooker, which I know is a completely different sport. Why do not more women play? I mean, unless they just don't like snooker, which is fair enough. You know, it should be completely open to all genders because it doesn't matter whether you're male or female. You can just play snooker. And I think there's an element of that in motor racing too. And it's almost an issue because we do have an all-male Formula One grid. And the idea of having a women's only Formula One championship is ridiculous unless you run it so they're all on the same grid racing at the same time and you just have a men and a women's title and then an overall title. We do it like that.
If you look at Formula E, which obviously hasn't been going that long, there's women drivers in that.
See?
Jarno Trulli's own team, he's got, I can't remember her name, but she's in there. There's a woman in there racing. So
there's Catherine Legg raced at some point in Formula E, and I think Suriti as well. Michaela Suriti.
Danica Patrick in IndyCar or NASCAR. She's moved around, but she's doing quite committed.
Yeah, and with the Haas team coming in, you might see it. I want to get into Formula E. What's that?
Her name is mooted a lot with Haas, I reckon.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, we can't really get into this debate because otherwise this podcast is going to be a proper long. Well, that's enough of Pastor, I think. Sauber did well again to a degree. Felipe Nasser needs a nickname. We need to just call him something different because when he's racing with Felipe Massa, it's just ridiculous.
Spaceman.
Well, yeah.
Nasser, space.
Oh. Yeah. We could just call him Pepe. I think you just call him Pepe or something. Pepe Nasser.
When they're calling him Fred during the commentary.
Fred? Love it. Let's call him Fred.
You go along the sort of Brazilian football route, they just add an Eno at the end of it, the smaller version.
Felipe Nasinho. Nazarinho.
Yeah.
He did very well, I thought. There was some great racing, some great overtakes from him. It's the first we've really seen of him. But the racecraft and the way he was getting past people was very impressive.
I was impressed with Nasser in GP2. I always thought he would be good when he got into Formula 1, and it seems that that's borne out.
Love it.
I remember watching some of his races a few years ago. I just thought, wow, he's good, that one.
Well, if you're overtaking cars and not running into them, you're in GP2.
Exactly. That's,
you're going to make a name for yourself. And I just wanted to mention Will Stevens, who qualified a second ahead of Mary in qualifying. Which you would do. You would qualify in qualifying. But he finished a second ahead of his teammate, which I thought was very impressive, given theoretically the cars are both...
And then had to start behind him because of a mad Venezuelan.
True.
Who decided to not pull off.
Pasta. Always comes down to pasta, doesn't it? Every time. Right, of the weekend debates then, gentlemen, let's start with driver, shall we? Who bids? Ooh. Bids... May I open the bids at Kimi Raikkonen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
We probably discussed why, but yeah.
It was just a good race for him. Yes. He needed that result as well, so.
He did.
Yeah.
It was a really good, really solid set of laps to pull that gap in.
Mm.
I mean, without the issues at the end, he was relentlessly taking a second, 2 seconds a lap out of Wolfsburg.
On the wrong tyres as well.
Yeah. It was 3/10 quicker than Vettel as well.
Yeah,
so,
there you go. And fastest lap.
Yeah, sort of middle sector, so when he's on the harder tyre, he's matching on the others on the soft tyre, which was the bit that they said was impressive.
Indeed. Yeah. Suggestion was he was on it a couple of laps too long.
Yes.
And then he probably would have, well, he could have won the race. Goat of the weekend. Who screwed up? I've got a couple of suggestions, if I may. One, fireworks going off while the race is still going on. I hate it. You launch the fireworks once everyone's finished. I know it's for dramatic effect, but we had, I can't remember, Bottas, I think, holding off Vettel. They're still racing. Fireworks going off in the background. No, we don't need it. End the fireworks. It's all right. You can wait. Wait until they're on the podium or something. Anyone else?
I don't really get the fireworks. Williams, in a way, for Massa's car. That just seemed to not work when it, and I called it when they were doing the warm up lap because all the teams went and there was one guy with what looked like a battery starter pack still next to his car. Then he just seemed to panic because he had to get off the grid, otherwise they got penalty. He just went and just ran, and the car was just stuck. So, but then of course, also the other shout has to be the guy we mentioned about 100 times already.
Pasta.
Yes.
Pasta, for reasons aforementioned. Anyone
unfortunately
else?
Yeah, I don't like to keep going every week.
No, we've been quite good to him recently, but you know,
Renault. Could we nominate? Can we rank? Can we nominate engine manufacturer?
Absolutely. They had a shocker. They had another shocker. Although the difference is Red Bull are just about keeping patience publicly, at least at the moment. Mm-hmm. The only other one I wanted to mention, great quote from David Coulthard when Ferrari were celebrating, I think, Kimi overtaking Rosberg. And there was a bit of a sparring afterwards. I think he came up with some comment like, oh, they're celebrating a brilliant pizza that isn't quite done yet, or something like that. I couldn't work out if it was racist or wrong or funny, but, you know, DC, you can't do that. Team of the weekend. I've actually left this as a question mark. Mercedes for a 1-3, but they didn't really do a lot. Ferrari, okay, but again, you know, could they have made most of it? Everyone felt like they could have made more of their weekend.
You could say Red Bull for having two cars finish and both in the points.
Probably the closest that had come. Anyone disagree?
But Lotus had a good...
Yeah, well, as a team.
Grosjean, yeah. It was a decent seventh position, to be honest, Grosjean. But yeah.
We won't mention Pastor
again. Yeah, we'll leave it
alone. Josh is smiling, so we'll take that. And a highlight.
I really enjoyed Kimi's run at the end.
Yeah.
I thought that watching that was quite... Yeah.
It was a dramatic last couple of laps with all the issues and everything.
I'd say even the last 10 or 15 laps was just quite tense, and it was good.
Given what we've had, you know, in other races.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen a car catch another that sort of gap for quite a long time without having some clear problem. And I'm assuming the Mercedes didn't have problems until the end
from
the way that they were performing.
No, I agree with that.
I drink Sparks.
Yes, yeah. Which are by design, aren't they? Really,
titanium skid plates.
Yeah.
You see, I find it quite interesting because people are complaining that it's felt false, but that's titanium plates was exactly what they used in the 80s, which was when they made them spark.
They're brilliant.
Yeah, they were brilliant then, so is it any different now?
There's a problem with Formula One. Everyone wants to complain about something, even if it's artificial, if it's not, if it's in the way, if it's not happening, if it's helping the show, if it's not. It just seems that people are having a bit of a whinge. Outside the people who are really enjoy the sport. Maybe I'm being harsh. Maybe there are people out there who don't want to see it, but who love Formula One, but I'm not so sure.
Formula One's always going to struggle with like pure racing and the show and to get like a happy mixture, really, but I think it's fine. I mean, yeah, I quite enjoy it. That adds a difference to it. It's not harming the performance of the cars or anything, so...
They do have purpose as well. I was reading Will Buxton's blog and he gave some technical detail for why it was there. It was something to do with the other plates, the older skid plates used to be of a heavier metal that would then leave bits of metal on the circuit when they wore away. So apparently there is a technical reason for it as well as a...
There's always a technical reason.
There's always a reason.
Apart from the trumpets on the exhaust to make the engine sound. That was not a technical reason. All right, let's wrap up Bahrain then, shall we? Thank you so much, gentlemen, for your time. Much appreciated. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back, of course, with our Spain preview podcast. Although it will be early. We've got a 3-week gap, haven't we, until Spain, but we won't be waiting 3 weeks before you get to hear that, don't worry, because we'll be recording it in a minute. And you'll get all the latest on the predictions and all that sort of stuff. But to go through the housekeeping, don't forget, we are on nrf1.uk for our little website, and you can catch the podcast there, hosted by our friends at Acast. And also Twitter feeds and various things. The website's still needs a bit of TLC, but we're going to get around to that very quickly, I promise. On Twitter, at TheNRF1, or you can get me, at Michael J. Bailey. These guys are all on Twitter as well. Let's start with you, Josh.
At IamRayman.
Lovely. Rich?
At Bax_kid.
Bax for the Nex.
Yeah, that's the one.
Kyle?
At Kcumbers.
So you can all say hello. people love saying hello on Twitter, so we do that. And I'm going to make more of a feature of the Predictions League over the coming weeks as well. So there'll be lots of things to follow as we get into the European season, of course. But until our preview podcast, thanks again for listening, and we will see you soon. Bye for now.
Save big on your next landscaping project at Menards. We make landscaping simple with our free, easy-to-use design program and step-by-step project guides. Plus, we have the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Save big on our 12-inch smooth patio blocks on sale now. Stop in to see our full selection and get your project started. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.